Well, welcome everybody to the Swartz Creek Community Podcast. Ben Meinke here, Swartz Creek School Superintendent with my gracious co-host.
I'm Adam Zettel, Swartz Creek City.
We're excited today to be talking about a topic that we get a lot of questions about here at the school, and we've certainly seen a shift in the last few years as we're going to be talking a lot about STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. A lot of times we throw an A in there and call it STEAM as we get into the arts as well. But we're here with two gentlemen that are going to be able to shed some light on this topic and really kind of exciting ways. And so Josh Atwood is here. He's one of our teachers here at the school district. He teaches high school mathematics and also Project Lead the Way. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Matt Storm is here with us from Kettering University. And Kettering is a tremendous ally in this new endeavor for us. And Kettering has been just a strong partner for us through for a very long time, and being one of our local universities that is really doing some amazing work in this engineering and science and technology area space. So, Matt, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess we can kind of get things kicked off, and we'll talk just a little bit about what it is that we're talking about when we talk about STEAM education. And I think probably, Adam, you remember when we were in school, it was kind of like you would go in and the teacher would say, hey, sit in your seat, and you sat there. And if you were really good and you sat still and you didn't touch anything, you know, you got a good report from your teachers. But we're really kind of shifting that landscape, because what we know in the 21st century is that most of our jobs are actually in this IT field. They're in the science, technology, engineering. There's a lot of math involved. And what we know is that kids actually, we have to be producing graduates that can solve problems, that think differently. They don't take things on face value. And that's a much different skill set than what we learned in traditional school. So I don't know if that was your experience as well.
Absolutely. And I can see this having an impact even in my young children who are in the district, that it's not about getting to a point where you can memorize, you know, some anatomy from biology with flashcards. You know, retain this information, it could be useful. There's so much new information every day, and so much new that out there as far as being innovative and creating technologies 5 years from now we're not even talking about today, that my children are being put into a mindset that's different. We're observing that shift in how we educate, because the expectations are different and the children are different. And so it is more about critical thinking, problem solving with things they might not even have encountered yet. So creating the functionality of the brain more than just cramming stuff into it and being prepared for the real world and something that they're otherwise prepared for, because they can do arithmetic or whatever it is. And so I'm definitely observing this within our district and the children that are there, because quite frankly, I get frightened sometimes when I hear those discussions about how, you know, some percentage of the jobs our children might be trying to be prepared for don't exist yet. We don't even know exactly what they will be, what kind of accumulated knowledge or functionality or talents they're going to require. But it's within the foundations that I think that the STEM or STEAM is trying to build. And so it's much more process based than, again, take this knowledge and regurgitate it onto a written test form, and then let's see how you did.
That's a great point, and the point that you make about we don't even know really what a lot of these jobs are going to be, and so we're constantly trying to figure out, and I know Josh is going to speak to this a little bit, how we prepare students. But Matt, talk a little bit about how does Kettering position themselves? Obviously, you've got a great reputation. The school is fantastic. They're just a class act all around. But as we think about what Kettering does to think about job outlook and what are we going to do for these students that we're taking in and preparing them for, you know, so what majors are we going to offer? What are we going to put out there? What do you guys really start to think about relative to the skills that kids are going to need, or even the jobs that are going to be there that you might not even know about yet?
So Kettering has been around for 100 years, and we've been trying to constantly evolve in how we teach and what we teach. Part of that evolution comes from our partnerships with corporations and companies. I'm sure most people in our area understand or know the name GMI and our former name as we were owned by General Motors. And so we as we've branched out and we've taken on more employee partners with that, those employee partners tell us what kind of skills they need, what kind of education that we need to be providing to the students as they hire our students on for co-op. And then the students then also are very integral in how the university can adapt and alter maybe not specific courses, but what they teach within a course. So a student can go off, learn a piece of software or learn a skill at a company, and they come back to campus and they're all excited because they learned this thing, and the professors then have to slightly alter what they teach because they see that is what the industry is asking for. So we get real-time feedback from our students every 3 months when they cycle on and off of campus. We get the real-time feedback from industry saying, this is skills, these are our tools, or these are pieces of software that our students, that people need to have in order to get a full-time job with us.
It's so interesting. You know, I know that I haven't heard this about Kettering to be the case, but I know that a lot of times the knock on professors is that they don't want to change anything. So, you know, if you're telling them, hey, there's this new thing, and they're saying, well, I've been doing this for 20 years, this is still the way that I want to teach you how to do it, but that might not be relevant. Are you finding that that's kind of an expectation Kettering has of your faculty, that they're looking at these new practices and being willing to adapt, or are they just inherently doing that? What's the take on that?
So professors are strongly encouraged to continue doing research into whatever field they specialize in. One of the things that Kettering likes to brag about is that most of our professors have industry experience.
Okay.
And so they have done the job. And so when they get a textbook in front of them to teach the class, most of the time they might look at that textbook and think, this isn't exactly how I did it. So they alter from there. But our students, you know, we offer the opportunity for our students to learn alongside professionals. So when they come back and our professors hear this is how the professionals are doing it, then that has to be taken into consideration for how they teach their courses.
Sure. Sure. Well, Josh, I know that you deal on the front lines because you've got the kids before they get to Matt. And so you've been teaching for a while. I know you've taught math for a long time at our high school here in Swartz Creek. You've seen kind of an evolution in what we're asking students to do and what we're asking them to know. How have you seen that change just in your time of teaching?
In my time of teaching, I think it goes back to kind of what Adam said at the start of it, which is we sit down, you have a curriculum, you have a book, we're going to get through so much in the course of a year. But that doesn't necessarily determine how well a student might go out and be successful later on if they just are just meant to kind of come back and recall things. So you're seeing students need to pick up these transferable skills across many different disciplines. And so one of the things that we do in the engineering aspect of the project Lead the Way, it's trying to give students opportunities to be creative in design processes. For instance, in our principal's engineering course right now, we're starting a material sorter project. Students have 15 marbles that are going to go into a hopper. They've got to find a way to get them distributed to three different bins, all sorted by the different type of marble. There's going to be five or six different builds. They're all going to look very different. They're going to try to accomplish the same task, but it's going to be creative. They're going to have to challenge each other, redesign, but they're going to have to go through and really kind of brainstorm different ways to do it. It's so incredible to see a student and student teams work together to create something from just a very, here's a task. How are you going to make it happen? And you're seeing these things come, and you see the ability for students to take these skills and do these things, think on the fly, redesign, and it's a lot of fun to see them be creative, to see that spark, to see things they're passionate about and then come to life as they go through and do it. So it's definitely a nice shift to see. I'm excited where our district is positioned to go, and I think this will be a really exciting next 5-10 years in the district in terms of what we're going to ask kids to do and how they're going to be able to perform and hopefully prepare themselves very well for future opportunities out when they're college and career ready.
Yeah, so probably just for people watching this show, we should really clarify for them. I don't know, Adam, your kids are in the district. Do they ever talk about going to the STEM lab?
Of course they do. And I think that this type of hands-on stuff's exciting. I mean, it's for kids, especially when they're young, and there's not a great separation in their mind between what might be play and learning. Mm-hmm. And the STEM lab, you know, the kindergarten or third grade version of what Josh is describing is awesome for them. And it's hands-on. It's great.
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing. So I'm really proud of the work that our staff has done. Michelle Bielby is one of our district STEM coordinator. And so a lot of this originated about 6 years ago, and we started our STEM project really at all the elementary schools. And so our elementary schools have evolved in that time. And so we have kids that are actually coding robots. They're using CNC machines. They're using 3D printers. These are kids that are first kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade students, and they're all kind of the source of it. And Josh, you alluded to this, is about inquiry, right? So we have a problem, we're posed a problem, and it's not here's an answer or solution. It's you guys have to figure this out. And so the kids have a very difficult time distinguishing before, am I, you know, this is fun, I'm playing, but I'm learning all of these technical skills. I'm learning all of these engineering problem solving strategies, and that's so huge. We're actually teaching kids how to code spherobots, and they're learning basics of code and different coding languages, which are things that, you know, we just never even imagined at a young age. And so our kids at early on in elementary school, they're getting these skills, and we participate in the Young Innovators projects in Genesee County, and Kettering hosts that. And so I'd like Matt maybe to speak on that in a second. But from our elementary school, we're now looking at how do we transition them to middle school and high school. And that's, you know, Josh is a big part of that. And he mentioned Project Lead the Way, which is kind of a curriculum that we use for engineering. But we haven't had the same amount of spaces that the elementary schools have been afforded. And so with the bond that's right in front of us and we're building now, we're actually building these maker spaces. And here at the middle school, we're going to see a very large STEM addition where kids are going to have this space to go and create. The same will be at the high school, and there will be equipment. And basically what we're trying to do is outfit these schools and position ourselves to be preparing kids to move into these career fields and give them not just the great teachers that can teach the curriculum of these practices, but also how do we create the opportunity for the equipment that they're going to be using in the field. So that's kind of the gamut that we're trying to run. And it's a big project. It's a big project. So talk about Young Innovators, because somebody might not really know what that is and how we're involved with that with Kettering maybe a little bit.
So it's something that I'm not extremely familiar with. One mm-hmm. of my colleagues is the coordinator for Kettering with Young Innovators. We invite schools and school districts that to submit applications for inventions that I believe it's elementary school age children can do. Now they have to have a poster board, and they have to give a short presentation on what their invention is, how they came up with it, and what problem it's solving. And then there's usually a day on campus at Kettering and our the large what we call our international room, but it's a large space where all the kids are sitting in there, and then people walk around, judges, parents, siblings get to walk around and ask about the invention. Most of the time, the kids have some sort of device or tangible thing to show. Other times it's just pictures of maybe a process that they've improved or something. Through that, we've I know that the innovators can then move on to other levels within mm-hmm. the state of Michigan for innovation. And that I don't want to speak too much to because I don't know a lot about after what Kettering does. But we love the innovative mind. We love mm-hmm. the student that's willing to sit down and think, how can I do this differently? What can I build? What can I code? What can I do to solve this problem? That's the exact student that Kettering looks for. And so having these kids on campus at such a young age is fantastic.
Yeah, we're really proud of the partnership that we've had with Kettering just on many levels, but that's been a great project for us to work on together. And Deke Elementary School has sent for the last 3 years the most students to Young Innovators of any elementary school in Genesee County. And that's a pretty powerful thing. So we're excited about that. And we tout that our science and technology programs at our elementary school really are state of the art. They're top notch. And that's a lot of because of the partnerships that we have. But Adam, I know you and I have talked a lot about different things. We talk about community and different things we're doing. One of the things that I know recently you've done is you've tried to think about how do we bring in talent particularly as you've had attrition and things like that, that are more technically focused. I know recently you had a pretty big hire. Maybe talk a little bit about the things that you've noticed in your time as a city manager, the skills that you're looking for in your employees, maybe how they've shifted.
Yeah, and that's something we talk about often. And with we have a new department head who's a professional engineer, and a lot of the conversation, you know, quite frankly, he's a Gen Xer like I am, and in his previous background in the private sector, a lot of it was working with, you know, what he would say is millennials and a different culture that surrounds that environment. Many of them do come in quite talented, with a strong proclivity for problem solving, but the work culture is changing. And so, and one of my observations goes along that line is, you know, what can we expect from the future workforce? How should we be shaping our workplaces, or trying to shape the workforce to accommodate what the workplace is? Mm-hmm. And so this is often what we talk about. So observation, I recall reading something about 2 decades ago about education and how, you know, the analogy is we all live on the mainland and we're trying to prepare our children to live on the mainland. We send them to an island and raise the drawbridge every day. The school, which might not actually reflect life on the mainland, and that's where they're going to learn to live on the mainland. And so there was that disconnect. And now with the STEM stuff, it's like, oh, that, it's hands-on. Kettering's perfectly hands-on. They literally send the students to the mainland to work, you know, and learn how to do that, have that co-op experience, and then bring them back to the island and engage in education. And so there is that literal bridging in the, you know, as the analogy goes, between making that connection. But one of the items we struggle with is sort of the change in the culture, the work ethic, if you will, or the perception of it. And so a lot of the folks that come in, they have the talents, they have the training, they have great accumulated knowledge, but they're not falling in with the stereotype office workplace environment, expectations for, you know, working within the daily attendance or whatever, you know, you're trying to set up. And so knowing some students that from Swartz Creek that went to Kettering, it was really hard, right? So of course you gotta, you know, you should do well on standardized tests. You should be able to synthesize calculus, but also you're gonna have to complete Calc 2 in 12 weeks instead of 16. And it's a huge weed out course because of the amount of work you have to do. You have to work really hard. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the questions I had going from secondary through college, and what can we expect in the workforce? Going back to your question, what can we expect in the future is, are students coming in with a different expectation for how much effort, work, or time they're going to put into their careers? Because I think the talents are there. We're concerned about what we're getting from future generations as far as is, honestly, the presence, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's not a knock on the trends we're observing in the workforce. But it seems to be the flexibility is very different. The expectations for contact with the job and the ability to work by proxy or engage in other things or be innovative on their own time is different. And so it's a struggle we have moving into the future. And so as I look at how we've been able to make that connection, you know, we've built a bridge between the island and the mainland as far as skill sets. The kids now know how to live on the mainland, but they're bringing an expectation, I think, of engagement that's just different. Not bad, but different. And I'm not sure if we need to adjust as employers or as a collective workforce, or if that's another item we need to focus on to be able to make sure that there's a connection between this is what the workforce requires as far as tenacity, which I saw a lot of at Kettering. Or is it going to be much more flexible where you might have 10 contact hours with your employer each week, work from home for another 20 and work on your own thing for 10, or, you know, like Google style stuff.
Yeah.
So not to oversimplify it, I'm talking a lot. But I guess to take the observation and pose it as a question, with the changing in the way we educate our children, there seems to be a trend towards massive proclivity for problem-solving, engagement, innovation, reliance on technology, but there's sort of a disconnect when you look at the standard office environment or workplace environment in terms of how folks interact. So are we seeing something different with the students as they go through co-op and find careers and the expectation of a workplace there? And is it something that's being reflected in how students are being educated here on the island, in the school? Start with Matt.
So I don't know if we see a difference in what the students expect. I can attest to the fact that when we get students on campus, the compressed schedule that we offer is a large challenge. The other challenge is that most of the students that come to us are near the top of their class academically, and so they get to Kettering, and it's the first time that they've really had to struggle with math or science in their classrooms. And so a lot of the students come, and they are extremely smart, but they don't have time management skills, or they may not have the best of study skills because they didn't have to do that in high school. Mm-hmm. It was always almost too easy for them. So the compressed schedule really, really pushes that. So students have to learn. But that's one of the things that our students do very well, is that they learn and they adapt. What the expectation is in the industry is almost forced upon them or given to them by their co-op. So our students that, you know, they come to campus for 3 months, they get integrated into the culture of the 12-week cycle, then they go off to a workplace, and then that work site, they have a culture that they're trying to build. So we do have some students that are allowed to work remotely for maybe a day or two a week. We have students that travel with their employers starting their freshman year, if there are projects at different plants around the country. We have students that they'll sit at a desk the whole time and work on specific pieces of software. We have students that are all over the plant in different areas. So what is expected of the student from the educational standpoint is that they have study skills, that they have time management skills, that they're willing to ask for help when they're struggling. We have plenty of avenues to which they can get help for free on campus, whether it's study partners or in the academic support center that we have. When they're at work, how they need to acclimate professionally is usually driven by the employer. So larger companies, our General Motors and Fords and FCAs, they have a culture and they have a plan set forth. But our smaller employers, like I work with a company in Lapeer that has 28 employees, including that includes 10 co-op students.
Wow.
So, you know, that one is a much more flexible environment. Now, they're expected to be at an office, but what they do on a day-to-day basis or how they handle their time is project-based, and so it could be that they're sitting at a desk or they're in a tool shop or they're out with a customer with the professional engineer that they're shadowing.
Okay. And I guess maybe to rephrase my question, is the skill set sort of the achievement or the goal that a lot of employers are looking for? Because I think a lot of the perceived difference might be that go back 30 or 50 years, it's give us the 40 or 60 hours a week and sit in your cube and be a draftsman or something. And now it's where that the innovation is what's being sought. You know, give us the technology, give us the results. We're not sure if it matters how long it takes you to do it or where you do it from. And these are, again, perceptions I have.
Well, I think that most employers are still wanting productivity, but what we are seeing is that the skill set it may no longer be sit at a desk. It may be that you need the multiple skill sets of you need to know how to design something, but you also need to know how to test it. And then after you've tested it, can you program that? Because everything that we have now has some sort of computer component to it, and so. The skill sets that are required and the demands that are put on the workforce are multifaceted, which is why you have to what Swartz Creek is doing with the STEM areas is so important, because you can't start that educational process in college. Mm-hmm. It has to start before, and then as you get up into college and they work professionally, then the companies see that. And so that's why they love our students, is because they know that they're getting students that are a little more advanced, that have a little bit more background and knowledge, so the company doesn't have to start at base level of, okay, no, this is how you use CAD. This is how you use Java. This is the programming language of Python. You don't have to do that with a Kettering student. And truthfully, any student that's going into an engineering field at any university probably has some background with that, but they know our Kettering students have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you said, Kettering it's part of their curriculum, so to speak, is to engage the students in time management and, welcome to the stressful environment. You might yes. have skated through before.
Correct.
But here comes a new set of expectations. It's going to require burning the midnight oil, you know, on Calc 2 at the textbook at night.
And not playing video games till 2 in the morning.
And that's
I mean, but that's – so, you know, you have students that have never had that that challenge put upon them before, and they get to a college environment. And I'm not saying students don't struggle with that at other schools, but when you have 16 weeks to learn the same amount of material that we teach in the 12 weeks or 11 weeks – then that it's a much more compact and pressurized situation. Yeah.
No, I've heard about it. That semester changed a lot of lives. I think Calc 2, fall of year 2 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So my question's been answered, I guess, in terms of learning how we get students from the mainland of the island back to the mainland. It sounds like even through higher ed, we're working on the work ethics and the approach you take to your time management and integration into your occupation that you might expect, mm-hmm. you know, for an employer at the end of the day. So,
yeah. And Josh, talk maybe a little bit about what you're doing on a daily basis, because you see kids that, you know, different than the university standpoint, you see all kids, right? So you're dealing with a very big and broad, I would say, charge, which is to try and help all of our kids not only learn these mathematics, engineering principles, but also to help them grow as individuals and the ability to time manage, whether they're going to a prestigious university like Kettering or they're going right into a tool and die shop. You're trying to help them understand those kind of life skills in a way. So maybe talk a little bit about what you're seeing and how that manifests itself for you in the classroom.
You know, some of the toughest things that I find that we run into in the classroom is, you know, trying to get kids to project themselves into the future. Mm. 10 years from now, I like to call it the 10-year you. 10 years from now, what are you doing? And hopefully start to engage kids with, well, this would be a really great opportunity. So what does that look like in 5 years, 3 years, 1 year? Let's build it back. What do you have to do? Always trying to find some of those long-term goal setting, at least to start the framework, because oftentimes kids can't manage the time very well. You know, they're going to go home. They feel the need to, you know, social media, video games, you name it. They're not thinking about some of these skills they have to have. And trying to get them to understand that we live in a collaborative world. And in the engineering class, it works out very well. A lot of what we do is team-oriented, team-building, working, accepting ideas. A lot of very talented kids, but oftentimes, I don't know if you run into this at all, Matt, but, you know, if you have some kid that's kind of been the top of his class and he's kind of done, and then all of a sudden you get a couple of those kids in a room and they've got to come up with something for a project, a lot of times there's not a lot of communication there. It's my way or not. And trying to give these kids those skills right now, which is easier to do in the engineering world, because a lot of what we do collaboratively really builds itself that way, and we can really take a lot from one another, talk about how we fit into a team and being adaptable. But in the general ed setting in a math class, sometimes that's harder to draw. You know, you try to use a lot of collaborative practices, try to have kids share ideas how they do things, but just trying to get kids to rely on one another as a resource as much as they may rely on the teacher, because once you get to that real world setting, you've got to be able to communicate what you need, adapt to what the team needs. And those are some of the biggest things, you know, I really wish to impart on a lot of those learners, because those are skills that they can take, and that piece is so critical if they're going to go and be a part of a flexible, adaptable workforce, which I think is, as you alluded to, Adam, is kind of where things are going.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And it's not a bad thing at all. And I guess that's one of my questions is, right now, my kid's experience with STEM is it's fun. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, the real world can be hard. And that's one of the things I think we all, as parents and as educators, we want to engage our children in the right amount of, you know, let's learn these skills and have fun doing it. You should like learning because it is fun. And then at some point, if you're going out there on the island or in the mainland, you know, it can be hard. You need to be ready for, you know, the adversity, the challenge, and the reward that can come with being successful when pressure builds and you're able to accomplish what you need to. And so how does STEM get to a point where you can have that expectation where there is a challenge to it now? So as opposed to having, you know, makerspace for a second grader that's fun, to maybe getting ready to apply to an elite university where you need to provide the challenge in a way that's not pushing kids away from the science or the math. Does that make sense?
'Cause are you asking, like, for instance, how do kids get skin in the game a little bit? Some accountability piece to go along with the innovation that they're providing.
Right, because you know, we all remember what it's like to be teenagers. You know, it's I'd rather go home and play video games than engage in something that's hard and challenging. And so it's, at some point it's like, well, remember the STEM lab is really fun right now. And at some point it's going to provide that, put your skin in the game, be vested, have some accountability, feel a little bit of pressure. And but without saying, well, this, why would I pick up this Calc 2 book? Yeah, this is just awful. And so, you know, how do you keep that engagement, that excitement as you transition in preparing those students?
Well, I think it's important to kind of keep in mind what the kids are capable of. And I've got a really great, my second year engineering course, principal engineering this year. They're fantastic, the coding, the design, you know, they're kind of knocking those things out of the park. So about 2 weeks ago, I was really laying in bed and I was like, how am I going to challenge these kids? Because right now they've kind of done certain things well. Some kids kind of drift to the coding aspect. Some kids can design really well. So I said, you know, I'm just going to give them a task. I'm going to come in, I'm going to give them a very open-ended task, but they're going to have to work as a class to accomplish it. And what we decided to do was we took a four cubic inch cube. I set it on the windowsill. I said, okay, I want it to move from here, walked across the room to the floor, safely transported down to the floor, and I put a gap in the middle of the room, and it's got to get across this gap. I need this to happen in about 7 days. I need you guys to figure it out. And they kind of looked at each other, and I stepped out of the room, and I witnessed what might be the most fun I've had in education in the last 15 years. You watch 13, 14 kids, high achieving, they kind of look at each other, decide what they have to build. They end up designing and coding five different robots that would accomplish it. And we brought in, invited our principal, Mr. Kitchen, in. And unfortunately, due to a battery issue, we were unsuccessful in the first attempt of doing it. But they did achieve the task a second time through. But it was a lot of fun to watch because now not only did they have to do their component, but they were responsible to each other's components. They all had something. So we talk about the engagement, but kind of high stakes. I can't just focus on this. So once they finish, they're talk with other groups, how do we make it better, the redesign. But they had a job to do. And I'm inviting in very important people in the district to witness what they're going to do. And there was definitely some disappointment. You could feel it when we failed that first attempt in front of some very important people. You know, they kind of felt that high stakes, like, oh man, you know, but they figured it out. But it was really nice to see them kind of rise to the challenge and kind of come out of their comfort zones. I can't just worry about my little piece now. I've got to kind of offer my expertise in other areas. And it was just a lot of fun to watch them kind of go through that entire process. It was, but when you go back to the question, as I kind of, you know, talking about that, you know, it's trying to find ways in which kids can surprise themselves and give them something attainable, but yet out of their comfort zone that they don't know they can quite get to yet, and hopefully be there to kind of boost them if they need a little bit along the way, but let them kind of go on that journey and kind of structure. And it was a lot of fun to watch them do that. It was a great time.
Yeah. Well, it could be a topic of another podcast, I'm sure, but I'm kind of glad they didn't do it the first time. And I'm glad the kids got it, but that, you know, when you're dealing with innovation, I don't know how many failure attempts occurred between, you know, ground, you know, no foundation in the launch of the Saturn V rocket, right? I mean, so these kids that are working on this, congratulations going through that. And that those teaching moments when it doesn't work, it's some of the best that comes out of it. Absolutely. And character building that results is outstanding. So,
yeah, failure is one of the greatest teachers. So, and STEM really affords that opportunity for kids to try something and then it be okay when it doesn't work,
right?
Because that just means we're closer to our goal. And I think we talk a lot in education now as we really have looked at, you know, where we've come and where we've been. There is an important level, as much as we talk about protecting children, and we absolutely protect children. We want it to be a super safe place for them to come to school and learn. We also want to expose them to healthy levels of adversity. Mm-hmm. And that is something that builds their capacity to engage in more challenging tasks. And so our teachers are really becoming skilled in pushing students. And when you tell a student, maybe traditionally in a classroom, it was, let me show you all the steps to do this project. We're going to start here at step one, and almost like you're reading an instruction manual, to this is what we're going to create, go figure it out. And the teacher becomes a facilitator and a guide to helping them get there, and they have to try and they have to fail. There's so much deeper levels of learning, and it's tough, and it's actually much more difficult because I don't have the instruction manual in front of me. I've got to learn how to actually backwards design and engineer this. And so it's an exciting time in education, but I think for a lot of people that are watching, you know, this show or that have been experiencing this with their own children, it's different than when we went to school. Mm-hmm. And that's partly because it needs to be, because we're trying to help prepare students to go into jobs that, again, we've talked, we don't even know what they they are. And a lot of times when people hear STEM, and we didn't talk much today about robotics, we have a robotics team, we have Lego League, we have all of these things that kind of build and culminate as clubs that are really fun, but that's just a piece of what STEM is. STEM is actually something that permeates throughout our entire curriculum. And so it's an exciting time for kids to be going to school, and I wish I had some of these experiences myself as a student. But as we're kind of wrapping up our time today, for either of you gentlemen, thank you for your expertise and your willingness to share some of your insights into this for anyone watching the show. Is there anything that you'd want to leave anyone that would be watching this that may have just a question or would like to follow back up with anything, any other follow-up questions, anything you'd like to leave people with today?
Well, the only thing that I would add is you brought up robotics, mm-hmm. and we talk about being able to work in a multifunctional team environment. And Kettering has seen through the course of the last few years that students that participate on those Lego League and FIRST Robotics teams understand that a lot better. Like, they're invested in the team environment. So, you know, it's no longer an individual striving for a goal. You're mm-hmm. part of an organization and a team, and those are skills that are translatable. And that also, those teams help with what is traditionally known as the soft skills, which is something that is generally a little weaker in our STEM students. You know, they have a tougher time communicating. They have a tougher time empathizing mm-hmm. with other students. Or their colleagues. But when you're a part of a team, when you have a common goal with a group of people, those skills come out a whole lot easier, and they're a whole lot easier to be taught. Plus, I know that Kettering also enjoys it when our students fail. Not necessarily in the classroom, but mm-hmm. when they work on a project and that project doesn't work the way it's supposed to, because that gives you the teaching moment that's needed. And so, you know, I guess the thing that I would leave with is to encourage your children or your students to push themselves and to fail, so that way they can learn and adapt for the future. The other thing I would say about jobs, 5 years ago or definitely 10 years ago, did anyone know what data analytics was?
No.
And now that is perhaps the fastest growing job sector that we see, is people that can look at, that not only can look at the data, but collect the data. How do we collect the data? What kind of devices are we building to collect whatever kind of data? I was listening to a podcast about professional athletics and how people are trying to figure out ways to get any kind of data, whether that be the stance of a person in a batter's box, whether that be the speed and direction of a collision of football players in a field. But people have to design this stuff and build this stuff, and they have to understand it. So there are jobs that, yes, haven't even been created, mm-hmm. But it's the skills you learn and how do you approach problem solving that is taught in STEAM that is huge into that.
That's awesome.
So I'm sorry.
No, you're good. There's
so much good stuff here. He said he commented on failure way better than I did. I made it sound like I like watching kids fail. but we got to bring in our department head engineer to go over some of the stuff he's talking about, because even in a small town like Schwartz Creek, as we work collectively with Genesee County, there's so much data analytics and GIS, you know, and augmented reality and virtual reality for, you know, understanding what's underground, how it's functioning, and how we go about asset management. Like I said, even a small community. And so a lot of the workforce, going back to your question, from our DPW staff all the way up through our partners at the county, are very much engaged in doing new forms of data analytics with GIS and augmented reality, so that we have a future that we're much more efficient and productive on managing our underground and surface infrastructure. So it's fallen hand in hand as we look towards the future.
Absolutely.
Well, I think, Matt, you said it very well. A lot of things I would like to have touched upon. But, again, going back to, if you don't talk to your kids or you talk to the experiences that they have, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to build up a resilience. It's okay to say, I'm going to come back and figure it out tomorrow. Because the ability to do that allows them to take on more. Because one of the hardest things to do in a classroom right now is to work with a student who has not developed that skill yet. And the first time they make a mistake, whether it's mathematical in the engineering world, they hit that shutdown point, and trying to build up to say, it's okay to make mistakes. We're here, we're gonna support you, we're gonna keep working at it, but just have the attitude that I'm gonna come in every day to work hard to get better. And a lot of times we can move through a lot of those problems that we have. So I would like to kind of also, you know, comment on the failure piece. It's absolutely okay, and it's okay to come back and keep trying, and we're going to get it there. And then that's the one thing that if a parent's talking to a child about their experiences, that's what I'd like to see kids kind of develop more, that ability, that persistence, that, you know, and it's okay to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a great show, and I hope it sheds a little bit of light on this area for our parents and our community members that may be wondering, hey, education's a little different now than it used to be. So we hope all of you have a fantastic week, and tune in next month, and we'll be back.